all of this comes down to self-awareness, because you can't do this and come out of it and not be self-aware, or at least practice self-awareness.
Welcome to the Durango Joe's podcast, where we believe everyone deserves a smile, a warm greeting, and a great cup of coffee. I'm your host, Trevor Ogborn, and as per the usual, I've got Joe Lloyd with me on the mic this morning. Joe, how are ya?
I'm doing pretty good, Trevor.
Glad to hear it. And yeah, we've also got Tiff with us today. Tiff.
Yeah, hey, how's it going?
Good. Good morning. So, Tiff, I've got a question for you right out of the gate. Without giving away my disc profile and without giving away Joe's disc profile, how would you approach us differently if there was a problem that came up and you need to break that news to us? How would you approach that with each of us?
Yeah, great question. Well, if I had a problem and I had something that I needed a solution to, and I knew that you, Trevor, had the solution, I would come to you with all the details. I'd make sure that I had the background story. This is what happened. This is what I've tried so far. This is where I've gone, and probably give you all the details. With Joe, he's more of a bottom line guy. So I would come to him and I'd say, Joe, I have a question. It's with this. The other thing that I am careful to do with Joe, because obviously as my boss and my leader, I go to him often, is to make sure he understands that I'm coming to him from a place of, you know, we will do what you feel is right. And here is the bottom line. And typically when it comes to the details, he's really great about coming back and asking me the details he wants to know versus me just starting with all of the details, because he would get a little lost in those and frustrated by them at times.
Does that sound about right, Joe?
I don't know how she does it. But yeah, she nails it every time. Yep.
Yeah, you're just shaking your head to the details. You don't want no details. You just want the bottom line so you can make a decision.
Yeah, and move on, you know, because it's... Who wants to waste time, right? So, yeah.
That feels like a dig on me now.
No.
Because by retrospect, I really want the details. Right? I want to know and understand everything that goes into it.
Yeah.
So, I mean, this is all leading into our conversation today. We've talked a little bit about understanding and building our own self-awareness before on this podcast. We haven't really talked yet, though, about the tool we use to do that at Durango Joe's. And that's basically a personality assessment. And so the whole goal of a personality assessment is, I think, on one hand, to help us understand ourselves a little bit, how we walk through the world. And then on the flip side, how other people are walking through the world around us, so we know how to interact with them better. Is that about right for what a personality assessment is and how we use it here at Durango Joe's?
Yeah, absolutely. I would say that a really important piece to personality assessments is that there's a mistake that leaders can make, and that mistake is assuming that the way that I see the world and the way that I interact with the world is the only way that everyone interacts with the world and the only way to see the world. And that's just not true. There's no right or wrong way necessarily, but there are very different ways that everybody has.
It's funny you say that, because that came up in one of our last episodes on negotiations with Jasper. He was talking a lot about coming to the table and trying to understand other people's motivations.
I can't control anyone in this world except myself. And so for me to assume that I can just come alongside and be like, this is the way it is and you need to do it this way, well, there's certain scenarios where I can adjust myself and understand and realize I may approach this conversation or this coaching session a little differently, knowing that you have a different perspective and you will hear this better from me if I adjust the way that I approach you. And that is a really great way to care for your team, to help build underneath them and bring them to success in a new way.
So I just want to play devil's advocate for just a moment, because nobody knows me better than me. I live inside myself 100% of the time. And at the same time, ideally, I'm spending a lot of time with my peers. So I'm picking up on what I think they're doing and what they're up to and stuff like that. So why would I want to invest in understanding a personality assessment when in reality, like, I should know myself, right?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I think my answer to that would be there needs to be a common language and a common understanding in an organization. It moves the culture forward when everybody is speaking the common language. And sure, you know yourself, but I don't know you quite as well. But if we're coming to the table and it's like, there's a common language here to understand an assessment where it maybe identifies bottom, like core motivations or fuelings that you like, this brings me life and energy that maybe you didn't even realize were there, number one. But two, that common language is so important for all of us to be able to come to the table and be able to be like, there is conflict and there is frustration here. And if you can run it through the lens of personality, often, not always, but often there is a breakdown of communication because we're just approaching it from our viewpoints and don't really have an understanding of where you're coming from.
Yeah. Well, and I think maybe this ties into my personality type too a little bit, but I feel like a lot of how we operate in the world is a little bit more feeling type.
Sure.
Like we kind of feel like we are moving this way or have this motivation or something like that. But I think that common language, giving words to it, giving it that definition, at least for me, really helps me think critically about it in a way I wouldn't otherwise notice, I guess. Yep. So there are a bunch of different assessment models out there for personality or behavior types, stuff like that. Could you give me a brief overview of a few of them?
Yeah, absolutely. I love geeking out on all sorts of different personality assessments. So anyone who wants to get in touch with me after this and geek out about any personality assessments or introduce me to new ones, I'm game. But there's the DISC, of course, which we're going to go in great detail. And that's what we use here at Durango Joe's. The Enneagram, I would say, is probably the most popular currently, just in culture overall. The reason I love the Enneagram is because the Enneagram showed me a little bit more in detail about myself. It helped me understand myself so much better because there's a lot of depth and detail when it comes to core motivations and the way that I, and more so than even behavior, I would say. However, there's a lot more details to remember with it when you introduce it to like a corporate setting. There's a lot more going on. So it's a little bit harder to remember. Myers-Briggs, very similar to that. I haven't spent a lot of time with the Myers-Briggs. StrengthFinders is another one. I haven't spent as much time with those, but the thing I love about personality assessments, I actually had a great conversation with a friend of mine who also loves to geek out on this. And he made a comment about how it's like, if we were like a crystal, different personality assessments are like different facets of that same exact crystal. Mm. And so it brings out these different pieces of you to help you learn yourself. But a lot of them have a lot more detail and again, can be a lot harder to really dig into and know other personalities more so than yourself. But when it comes to learning about yourself, I encourage people go out, take all of them. if that's your cup of tea, then go for it.
So there's all these different models, but ultimately at Durango Joe's, like we've kind of alluded to, we've really settled on the DISC assessment. Why does DISC work for Durango Joe's and why would we choose it over some of these other ones like Enneagram and Myers-Briggs? You've talked a little bit to this, but I want to go a little bit deeper.
Yeah. The DISC really focuses on the four letters D, I, S, and C, which we're going to dig into. And remembering four different letters and the details around four different letters is a much more graspable, I guess you could say. You really can grasp it quickly and easily in a 2-hour session. You can walk out really with a much better understanding and start utilizing it versus 9 numbers on the Enneagram or 16 variations on the Myers-Briggs. And so you can really apply it to your team because again, you can only control yourself. And so understanding others and their approach to the world is such a huge part of any personality assessment. And it's much easier and so much simpler to apply and to wrap your head around and move forward and use in a culture.
Jill, I want to ask you really quick. When did we really kind of start identifying that we wanted to work with something like DISC? And what sort of change did you see in the company since that?
Well, I took my first DISC test probably back in 2003 or 2002, basically.
Okay.
So I came into the coffee business knowing a little bit about DISC and it's evolved, you know, over the years. But as a leader, man, I've been working with people for so long. And so interpersonal relationships are so key to anybody's success, whether they're in whatever business. You got to learn how to get along with people. And the DISC identifies that in a way that really, like you said, Tiff, breaks it down into bite-sized chunks to where, you know, even a simple guy like me can understand it. But so early on, we started using the DISC even before we began to use it in an organized fashion. It was probably about 7, maybe years ago that we really implemented it into a program that we call team building. And so, and since then, Tiffany definitely has come on board. She has become certified in the DISC. And like she said, she really geeks out on this stuff. And so I really look to her in so many different ways when it comes to personality profiles to really guide and direct the company as we develop people in leadership.
Awesome. Now that we've sort of gotten that out of the way, let's dive into what DISC actually is. So like you alluded to, there's four letters, D-I-S-C. What are each of those letters and what do they mean?
Yeah, absolutely. I feel the need, whether it's necessary or not, to preface by saying this is a very simplified overview of all of it, just for the sake of time. And we'll get into how you can find out more about it later. But the DISNC, they are broken down. Initially, before getting into the DISNC, there are different ways and approaches to life that are broken down into two questions or two categories. The first is, what pace do you take life? Are you more active, outgoing? Do you talk with your hands? And as I say that, my hands are up in the air. Do you talk fast? How do you approach decision making? Do you like to take your time? Or are you pretty quick at making a decision? Or are you more of the passive, reserved, like to have the time with the decision and think that half of the world talks way too fast? And so that's the pace at which you take life. And different scenarios will call out different ways. Like, you might be really comfortable with a simplified, you know, decision versus a larger one. Obviously, most people are. The way to look at it is 51% of the time versus 49% of the time. What's your pace of life? The second question is your priority. And your priority is, in a given scenario, do you prioritize task or people? A really simple way to figure that out for yourself is at the beginning of a Saturday, do you wake up with a list on just a list in your mind of like, I want to get this done today and I want to get this done today. And then you make it to the end of the day and you're like, oh, I got those three things done. Great day. That would be prioritizing task versus people. You know, I might ask you like, hey, how was your Saturday? And it's like, oh my gosh, like, I know I was supposed to get a couple things done, but you know what? So-and-so called me and I haven't talked to them in so long. And then I went and got to meet so-and-so for coffee and I just really felt connected to them. And it was such a great day. It was just such a productive day. That would be a really simplified version of, do you prioritize task versus people? Again, I think different scenarios will call that out, but 51% of the time versus 49% of the time, which do you tend to prioritize?
So depending on how you answer those questions, you're basically broken down into these four quadrants, and those are the DISC, right?
Yep, exactly. Okay. So I'll start with the D. The D is the quick-paced, active, outgoing, but tend to prioritize the task. Some words that would define a D would be dominating, directing, demanding, determined, decisive, doing. They like to get things done. They don't mind stepping on your toes to get things done. Their basic motivation is challenge and control. So this is Joe. This is why I would say, given a scenario, he's a bottom line guy. He doesn't want all the details. And one thing that I think has been so helpful for me in interacting with people is to understand that each type also has a fuel, a thing that is breath in their lungs, like the gas in their tank gives them life and energy. And for a D, it is getting results. And there are scenarios, if something in their life is out of control and they can't really get the results or something they need, they will look for something else in their life they can control and get results in, because moving something forward is good. A lot of entrepreneurs do have this in them because they're very comfortable with, like, I don't care if I made a wrong decision. I'm just going to keep moving forward. I got to get results and I'm going to do it the way I want to. Doesn't mean you have to be a D to be an entrepreneur, but a lot are, because they don't always work for other people well.
Okay. And then I.
Yeah. So our eyes, again, fast paced, talk too fast, and have a really quick pace of life, but they tend to prioritize the people. So our eyes, they are inspiring, influencing, inducing, impressing, very interactive, interested in people. If you have a favorite inspirational, motivational speaker who tells great stories and you walk away from that and you're like, I laughed and I cried and it was beautiful, they're probably an I. They are very great at connecting with people and they're typically the life of the party. They're the ones when they walk in, you know, they've arrived, and they have a best friend at the park and at their job and in the elevator. They're the ones where you sit down next to them on the airplane and they're like, hi, I'm so-and-so. Where are you headed today? And they're just going to jump right in with you. They love people. Because of that, they can be a little easily distracted. A fun/funny way we like to look at them is they are a little bit like the dog in Up. We're like, ooh, squirrel, because they love the new, they love the adventure, and they love the people. Their fuel is affirmation with a basic motivation of recognition and approval. I would like to say here, most strong eyes love to tell you that they don't need affirmation and approval. And that's because I don't think anybody really likes to say, like, I need the pat on the back. Like, I need you to tell me how awesome I am. But I like to just, speaking as an I myself, that affirmation sometimes isn't the pat on the back. Sometimes it's just the acknowledgement that, hey, you did a great job, or I really appreciate what you put into that. And just making sure that my work feels meaningful in that way. It is really, I think that's everybody. Nobody wants to be like, just ignore the work I'm doing, obviously. But it's more of a, it drains me. It takes the air out of my lungs if I feel like there's no like affirmation, like, hey, I see that you did that. Good job. You know, that is what I like to speak to, that affirmation piece.
So you're telling me that a high I, you basically have to say, hey, you really do a great job at being annoying.
Yeah. You know, I would love that. No,
no. cause you're an I, but yes. You're not that annoying I.
No, a lot of people could probably identify an I in their life. Those who need that pat on the back usually let you know. Yeah. Usually it's like, hey, did you see what I did? Hey, did you see what I did? I think a really high I in a child is very obvious sometimes, but I really like, I can speak to this just from my own personal experience. Somewhat recently had a scenario where I'm somebody who I don't like to cry publicly very like ever, but I had a scenario where I was being called out on something, and the feeling inside of me, I couldn't even identify. I couldn't figure it out. I didn't know what was going on. And I'm like, why am I breaking down right now? And later, in just like sitting and working through it and processing it, it came down to the fact that I didn't want a pat on the back. I just wanted the like recognition of like, oh, you would know about that because you've been working really hard on that. Not even like, hey, you're doing a good job, but like, hey, let's ask Tiffany because she would know something about that. I started to believe the lie that what I had been doing wasn't meaningful, didn't matter. Because it was like, well, if you're not even going to look to me for an answer of something I've been doing, then like, what am I doing here at all?
Yeah.
It was really great. It was like this light bulb moment of like, oh my gosh, I just was looking for affirmation and I didn't get it. This is where the self-awareness comes in, because it was like, oh, what is the truth here? The truth is everyone knows I did a good job. Everyone knows that I've been working hard on this. And whether it's said or not, I can know deep within myself that was a job well done. And I don't have to have that from somebody else. So that is where the self-awareness of this tool comes in.
Yeah. Okay. So let's move on to the S type. What's the S type?
Yeah. So our S's, oh, the sweethearts, they are a little bit more of that passive, reserved, take life a little at the slower pace, but also tend to prioritize people over task. So they steady, stable, shy, security oriented, servant, submissive, specialist. Their basic motivation is stability and support. And they, I would say, while they prioritize people, they are not the, I have a best friend here and a best friend there, and I have people everywhere, and I'm the life of the party. They tend to be on the shyer side. They are loyal to the end. They are loyal as the day is long. And once you have their loyalty, you have it for truly life. And they love to connect with people, but more on a one-on-one basis. And with that security oriented, I have seen this one really come out. I think change is the only constant in the world, right? And there are some people who really do enjoy change, but I think the majority of people are, you know, it's like, oh, change, here we go. S's, again, coming back to like what really drives them and what doesn't, a lot of change going on in an S's life, even if it's good change, just change in general, because that security orientedness they're looking for, once it's shaken up a little bit, it really can drive them to a little more stress or frustration, or, you know, and it expresses itself differently according to different people, but they like for things to be status quo and to fall into boxes and to just kind of just be. Their fuel is peace and harmony. They do not enjoy conflict or confrontation, even if you're in a meeting and two other people that they're not even involved with are having a conflict. They would much rather just like shrink out of their chair and crawl out of the room. Like, they do not appreciate conflict. They want the world to kind of just, everyone can get along, and I love you. Don't we all love each other? Let's get along. And so they are wonderful. I even love having them as leaders here in our company, because even though you would think because of their lack of confrontation and things like that, they may not be a great leader, you can learn different aspects, but they are the type of people in this world that you know that they love you for just the human being that you are, because they just really appreciate people for, and they see you as the human being that you are, no matter what your belief is or no matter who you are. And so unless you're marching around creating conflict, then they don't want to be around you. But but as a leader, they have a natural tendency to make sure their baristas feel believed in. And so when they do have to confront you, once they learn that art of confrontation, they naturally do it from a really caring place, which is a really fun thing to watch.
Okay. And then last but not least, certainly not least, because this is me, tell me about the C.
Our C's, again, on the pace, they're a little slower, more passive, like to take their time, especially with the decisions, things like that. But also, much like the D, they prioritize the task. So they are cautious, they are competent, calculating, compliant, careful, contemplative. I mean, the details, 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 details. So that is where, back to your original question at the very beginning, Trevor, if I had something that I wanted to come to you with, if I just gave you the bottom line, you're going to just kind of be like, and? Blink, yeah. blink, you know? And so you're going to wait for the details. You would almost prefer them first. And then I have all of the knowledge to come to you and now help you solve this problem as a C. So their basic motivation is quality and correctness, with that fuel being quality. If they are surrounded, especially in a work environment, if they are surrounded by people who are doing shoddy work, who are coming to them and saying, hey, you need to get, you know, I need you to do this right now, but not giving me the details, making like, if I can't do this correct, I don't want to do it at all.
Yeah.
And so I want to do a job very well done. And I expect that everyone around me also has that motivation to just do a really excellent job. So, you know, let's all move forward and do this quality together. Correct is one of their words. And it's funny because it's true. C's often are the correct ones, not because they just came up with a decision, but because they came to that conclusion or decision or what have you with many, many details and having analyzed it from every angle they can to make sure they really are correct. They are wonderful. These are the people you want looking at your books for you. You want this person performing your open heart surgery, probably not an eye performing your open heart surgery. These are people that we need in this world to catch those things for us. And it's so important. And Joe would speak to this, to have a very strong C in his corner as an entrepreneur, who's a very strong D, somebody who is catching those details and being like, whoa, let's look at it from this angle. Or, hey, like I looked at this, you know, and I caught this. Things that he may not necessarily see.
So when you look up in the dictionary or the manual for the DISC, I think Trevor's face would be right next to the C.
Yeah. Right?
I mean, you define that guy to a T,
yep.
You know? So that's pretty cool. So it's not a bad thing that you're a C, dude.
No, I enjoy being
makes
a C.
You a little anal, yep. At times, though.
Well, but that's a good thing.
It's a good thing. Yeah,
keeps all my
sometimes very necessary
legs crossed and my eyes dotted and
exactly.
All of that sort of yep. Stuff. What are some ways people can identify where they land on that? I mean, obviously, listening into this, they may have figured out, you know, ooh, that S really resonated with me, or that mm-hmm. I really resonated with me, and I think there's something to that. But if someone really wanted to figure out, you know, what am I? What are some different ways people can figure out their DISC personality type?
Two things I want to say before I answer that directly is, one, don't expect to identify with every single characteristic of your dominant type. Instead, look for the one that most aligns with who you are. You're not going to, you know, fit perfectly as in I'm just an S. Because along with that, the second thing I want to say is we are all a mixture. You know, Trevor, you're a C, Joe's a D, I'm an I. I'm actually an IDS. Joe's a DI. Trevor, you are a...
I'm a CSD.
That's right,
don't
CSD,
get it wrong.
No. Right? I know. Sorry.
But yes, I'm a CSD.
Now, Tiffany, don't you left me hanging there. Because I have three. I'm a DIC.
Oh, are you a DIC?
Yeah.
I forgot about the C. I'm so sorry.
Just saying.
Yep.
So.
Yeah, DIC. So, but along those lines, we are a mixture. We pull on all four of these at times. And I think that's an important thing to recognize, because honestly, to fit all of humanity into four perfect boxes, I think we all know that's a little silly. We are all a mixture of these things, and different scenarios will pull on different pieces of that. But we tend to all have a primary. So, on that note, honestly, I think the best way to diagnose yourself or to assess yourself on this is to study it. Same would be for the Enneagram. I would venture to say even some of those others, but Study it and learn it, and then observe yourself. Watch yourself. Pay attention in a scenario like of when I am prioritizing a task right now over the person. You know, really, as a mother, an example of that is there are times where we get home after work and the kids are done with school and it's like, okay, empty out your lunch boxes, go take your bath, like, let's get you some dinner, let's repack our lunches, like, you know, and I task my children. And sometimes they have a bad day and they need me to just put all that aside and just be like, how was your day? You know, and so that's like a really another example of where that task versus people come in. So observe yourself in real life scenarios. And that will help you more than anything. But also, there are plenty of assessments and links all over the internet for looking into DISC assessment or an Enneagram assessment. You know, I would love to even work with you with a certified DISC assessment. You can reach out to my email, which we can put at the end of the episode, if that works.
Yeah. We'll have you share it at the end and I'll put it in the show notes.
But I can even help out with that too. But you can find places to take an assessment, which is really helpful and kind of starts you on that journey. But more than anything, I always encourage our team and our leadership teams, observe yourself and really, really see where you land. And I think that's a really key thing to do.
Yeah. Well, and I think it's one thing to know your letter, but if you don't really understand that letter and how it interacts with the other profiles effectively, then all you have is, oh, I'm a C. Right. But what does that really mean? So doing that research, really A, observing yourself, but B, looking into it a little bit further. Mm-hmm. As with pretty much any tool out there, there's a wrong way to use it. If you flip a hammer the wrong way around, you're going to damage your wood instead of driving that nail home. Right. So there are right ways to use DISC and the other assessments, and there are potentially harmful ways to use that. There's actually a really great quote. This is from the Cat and Cloud podcast. Jared Truby, who's one of the business owners over there at Cat and Cloud, said that some of those DISC personality types are really helpful if you understand that they're not who you are, but they allude to how you operate in the world, and you have to decide why you're doing that. So I just want you to speak on that or respond to that a little bit, this idea that your DISC personality type isn't your core identity, but it's kind of an understanding of how you maybe operate around that identity.
Yeah, absolutely. I have a few prefaces that I love to say, usually even before I jump into describing the DISC with our managers. One of them, which I've alluded to, is that humans can't be put into a box. While we have a primary mode of operation, you can't, you know, box yourself or anyone else in. And just assuming that, like, oh, you fit perfectly into that C box, Trevor. So this is how it's going to be. And along those lines, it's easy to weaponize it. It's easy for me to look at one of your behaviors and be like, oh my gosh, you're such a C. The moment you find yourself saying, oh, you're such a this, you're such a nine on the Enneagram, that's weaponizing. And that is using a personality assessment against somebody. They're a human being and they have feelings and decisions and, you know, the things are that, again, it's not who they are, but it can drive some of those behaviors. Doesn't mean we need to call them out and be like, God, stop being such a whatever, you know? And putting expectations on people's behaviors. You can do the same thing to yourself, to be honest.
Absolutely,
like,
yeah.
You know, oh God, I'm such an I. I wish I wasn't so much like that. Like, come on, pull it together, Tiff, you know? Just have lots of grace with yourself and other people when it comes to that.
Well, and I think if you fall into that and you start just attributing like, oh, so-and-so's an I, that's just the way they are, you're robbing them of growth in a sense.
Yes.
You're just saying like, that's who they are and you're not accounting for the fact that they can grow and they can learn and they can figure out how to operate in different ways. And same thing, like you said, with yourself. Well, I'm a C, so I'm not going to go to parties and I'm not going to go out because the I personality type just is not me.
I don't have that.
I don't like parties and I don't like any of that stuff. But you're kind of robbing yourself that growth opportunity to look into those other areas. I think something, and this is something I learned from you, but looking at your DISC personality type, you should see what the other types are that aren't you and use your awareness to kind of learn how to get better in those areas. It's kind of a way to highlight or shine a light at places where you do have growth opportunity.
Yeah. My favorite analogy for that is to when you start, you know, branching out and learning the other letters that maybe aren't your natural tendency. It's not your natural go-to. I think as leaders, we need to learn those other ones. Recognize that you, Trevor, acting strongly out of your eye will drain you a lot faster
That's so true.
than operating out of your C. But here's the deal. If I were to say, hey, Trevor, I want you to sign your name, you would grab a pen with your dominant hand. You'd sign your name super easy. Looks like it always does. If I were to say, okay, now switch hands, you could do that. Like, absolutely, you could do that. It would be a lot more work. It'd probably be a lot sloppier and take more time. But in theory, if I were to say, Trevor, I want you to practice this twice a day for a month, then I'm going to come back and see how you're doing, it would get smoother. It would get easier. It would, over time, you would get a little bit more natural at it. Still wouldn't be nearly as natural as your dominant hand that you've signed your name with your entire life. But I feel like that's a really good analogy. You, same thing. I want you to really work on developing and growing in that eye, so to speak. It would look sloppier at first. And as you do it more and more, it would become a lot more natural. A really great tendency is that I kind of spoke to earlier is like an S, learning how to do confrontation well.
Yeah.
Same thing. As a leader, that S is going to walk in the first couple of instances of confrontation and, you know, confronting a barista or, you know, an employee on something that needs to be addressed might look a little sloppy, may not go really great, but the more they do it and the more they glean from those who are good at it and the support they have around them, the better they're going to get at it and do well. Again, probably will drain them, still probably always will drain them to a certain extent just because it's not their natural place to be. But if you recognize that and give yourself grace for that and know that's not where you have to be all the time, it really brings a great self-awareness to learning the other letters and acting in them.
Yeah, I love that. So Joe, I want to talk to you a little bit about planning your team strategically. I mean, if you're a D, is it more comfortable just to be surrounded by other D types, or how do you use DISC to kind of understand the composition of your team?
Well, I think all of this comes down to self-awareness, which we teach, because you can't do this DISC test and come out of it and not be self-aware, or at least practice self-awareness, because this won't be helpful.
Yeah.
If you're not self-aware, or if you're not practicing to be more self-aware, that I think that's ongoing through life. We're practicing self-awareness all the time, but this really is highlighted so much better when somebody can actually be self-aware and know the areas they need to work on, or know other people's areas that they need to work in, and not weaponize it against somebody else. All of that stuff is all wrapped up in self-awareness.
Oh, totally.
And it's so important that we're self-aware if we're going to use this as a tool. And so if we don't mention that and talk about that, then this really isn't going to do a whole lot other than confuse people, you know. But we love to use this in our training. We call it team building. About 6-7 years ago, we created this. Actually, we didn't create it. I'm giving props to Patrick Lencioni, who wrote the book, Five Dysfunctions of a Team, who basically lays out this team building template of how to create good teams. And we've been following that really very, very closely over the last 6-7 years. And it's so helped us as we grow not only as a company in numbers, but also as we grow our leadership. And that's one of the most important things that we can do at Durango Joe's, is to grow more leaders that are going to impact the world in which we live, whether it's at Durango Joe's or at the next job that they go to. So that's really important. And that's why we've invested a lot of time, resources into making sure that we have somebody like Tiff on board that knows her stuff, that really we can look at and go, hey, Tiff, I need help here on this one. And she can really intelligently walk us through something that would help us help someone else in a way that they're wired.
So Tiff, tell me a little bit more about these team buildings, who they're for, and who all participates in that.
Yeah. Anytime that we have a new member of a management or leadership team, so say we have an assistant who promotes to a lead at another location, so we hire on another assistant. Now we have two teams with a new member at those locations, if that makes sense. So a leader, an assistant of this store, and then a leader and assistant of another store who are new to working together. That is when we'll sit down as a leadership team. We have recently started bringing in our shift leaders as well. So anyone who is taking the step to promote from barista into a leadership role, those are the individuals we sit down along with myself and then the district manager for that state. And it's really fun. I love interaction and I love people. And so maybe I appreciate this more than others, but I really do. I think it's really fun. And so we sit down together and We always bring food. It's usually lunch, obviously, work day. I know that that is a minor detail, but I also think that it's kind of major because it really speaks to individuals like, hey, like this is important enough that we're going to carve out at least 2 hours, 2 to 3 hours, depending on the number of people in the meeting. We're going to bring you lunch and we're just going to have a great time and we're going to really look at this. And so it just sets it apart from just a normal meeting, which is fun.
Yeah.
So we always bring food and then we start the whole thing by getting to know each other. Honestly, I think so much of that is coming back to remembering you don't put people in boxes. They're not just a letter. They're not just an object. And one of the best ways to humanize someone is to know a little bit more just about them as a person and their story. And so we answer 4 questions about ourselves. I typically go first just to kind of get the ball rolling. The first is, where were you born and raised? The second is siblings and where you fall in line. Cause so much can, not always, but can, like, I'm a firstborn, I'm a classic firstborn. You know, sometimes there's like, I'm the baby, I'm a classic baby, you know, like, and sometimes it's just fun to hear a little bit about their family and their dynamics of their family. The third question is a struggle or a challenge that you faced either growing up or are currently facing. I will say that sometimes these meetings do go in depth and people really are open and willing to talk about something they're going through or have gone through. Sometimes the answers aren't quite as in depth, but either way, it really opens up a door to really understand each other better.
Yeah.
And we ask you to share whatever you're comfortable with. There's no requirements on that, but it really helps unify the team a bit. And then the fourth one, to make it kind of end on a lighthearted note with each person, an embarrassing story about yourself. And there's some good ones out there. I'll tell you what, it's usually this question is the hardest one for people to come up with, but oh man, it's really fun and pretty hilarious. So we love to start by getting to know each other and really humanizing each other and getting, you know, on that level of just who are you as a person and what drives you and, you know, where have you come from? So that's the beginning part. And then from there, they have everyone, you know, prior to the meeting, I make sure that everybody has taken the assessment even before they've even been introduced to it. So some of these people, they've never even heard of the DISC and I'm sending them an assessment, which is great. So they take the assessment and then I come prepared with the printout like of those results. But before we really open up those results and look at them and study them in depth, like, okay, here's you. I do the overview with a few more details than what I gave on this podcast. We try to keep these meetings, again, 2 to 3 hours at the most, and just give that overview, really teach the DISC, because you can know, again, your letter, but if you don't know what that letter means, then what's the point? So we really just introduce the DISC. And then before I even dive into here's you versus you versus you, I like to just get people's opinion on how they related to it. And then let's think about some of the individuals on your team and their behaviors. Would that tell you that this individual is an I or maybe a really strong D? Or some of the really great realization moments. There was a time where in one of these team buildings, we were talking about a particular barista that kind of drove some of the leadership a little bit crazy. And that was because this individual was what Joe referred to as somebody who really needed affirmation in their life, needed that, hey, you're doing a really great job, almost to the point of like, why are you asking me to tell you you're doing great again? And we started talking through that together as a team and how they could really reaffirm this individual. And it actually changed their perspective and really humanized this individual in their minds, as opposed to being frustrated with them still. It was kind of like, oh my gosh, that makes so much more sense. So it can be really helpful in that way of just identifying, okay, if you have a really strong, you know, D drive, like driven person as a barista on your team, and you are a leader who is an S, how can we work through that? And what is that, you know, barista who is kind of a more of a driven person really looking for? And, you know, how do you lead them well? And so we really talk through the team and then end with, okay, let's look at each of you. What does that mean for your interaction together? What does that mean for you as a leader? What are some of your things you should watch out for and be self-aware of, and know that I'm going to be really strong here, not as strong here. I look for support, look for the ways to grow. And that's how we end the team building.
And I think it's always good to know that there's a variety of people. Like, I think you had asked a question earlier. I don't know if I completely answered it, but
I de-drived right through it.
But the point is that you do want a variety.
Yeah.
And if you know what your blind spots are, especially if you've been in leadership a while and you're humble and you understand you need people, I don't think this company could run as well as it does if we had like a bunch of D's on our staff.
Yeah.
Well, that has its own conflict.
Right.
There's too many people trying to steer the wheel.
Right. I mean, if you can say anything about team building, and you have to have this ingredient or it's all going to fall apart. And that word is trust. And I think when you're sharing stories, when you're talking about history, when you're sharing something personal, that opens people's hearts up. Mm-hmm. And it allows people to be vulnerable. And I'll tell you what, man, when you have that secret ingredient in a team, your team could go anywhere at that point. When you trust each other to a point where even if you have an argument or a disagreement, y'all know that when you walk out of the room, you're going to still be friends. And that kind of trust, man, is hard to come by sometimes, but it has to be built and it has to be worked at. It just doesn't happen. And that's why we do the team building, because trust just doesn't happen. We got to take people out to lunch. We got to break this thing down. We got to talk about it. And so if there's anything that, you know, if you're out there and you have a small team between 3 to 12 people, great. Team building, if you haven't done this, it's not too touchy-feely. I mean, you do talk about things, but we don't sing kumbaya, and, you know. And we're real people, and we just tell stories, and we talk about it, and it builds trust.
I will say, going through this experience with you, Tiff, and the whole leadership team, back when I was first onboarded, back in 2018, having you share your story, your siblings, like all those four questions that we answer at the very beginning, and having you lead and kind of pave the way for that, like as a C type, I'm going to this, oh, embarrassing story, stuff like that. I really struggled with that and didn't know, like, didn't have that trust yet, that vulnerability. Mm-hmm. And I think having someone who's already kind of established with the team, someone who's clearly a leader in that position, actually get vulnerable and be very genuine in that moment. And again, yeah, it doesn't have to be like mind-shatteringly deep or dark or anything like that in what you're sharing. But seeing that vulnerability, I think by the time the group got around to me and it was my turn to share, even as a C who's like very introverted, I was able to see and model the same type of trust and vulnerability. You said it briefly, you opened this up just to kind of give people a model for it. But I think that is so critical, having someone who's a clear leader on the team pave that way and show what vulnerability and trust looks like for the team.
Absolutely.
So Tiff, we promised we'd give your email here at the very end so people can reach out to you. How can people learn more about DISC if they want to reach out?
Yeah, absolutely. So my email address is the word culture@durangojoes.com. I have said it multiple times throughout this. I love geeking out on this. I love talking about it with people. It truly fuels my tank to talk about this with people. So absolutely feel free to reach out and we can talk about this. That being said, if you wanted to look into it yourself, there are so many fun, easily readable materials. If you just Google DISC personality assessment, or even I have done this multiple times, jumped on Pinterest. If you have a Pinterest account, DISC personality assessment, make sure you put the words personality assessment behind the word DISC, or you'll get a lot about Frisbees.
Well, awesome. I think that checked everything off of my list for this episode. So thank you so much for joining us, Tiff and Joe. We'll talk to you in the next one.
Yep. Looking forward to it, Trevor.
Thanks, Trevor.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Durango Joes podcast. We hope it's given some practical ideas for the year ahead. If you enjoyed this episode, please consider leaving a review and share it with someone else who might benefit from the message. The Durango Joes podcast is published by Durango Joes Coffee. It's written and produced by yours truly, Trevor Ogborn. You can find more of me over at brewedup.com. That's BRWDUP.com. Durango Joes. Love people. Love coffee.